Welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to episode number 37 of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Edward Lamb, and my pal Sean Orford. Hi, Sean.
I'm very good. Good morning. How are you?
I didn't ask how you were.
I'm just letting you know. I am very good. How are you?
I am very good. I'm pretty good as well, yeah. Feeling good?
Yeah.
It's getting pretty chilly outside, isn't it?
Actually, it was warm this morning.
I think?
Yeah, when I went out for my run at 5 o'clock, it was quarter to five, there was no frost. Which was great.
Well, I mean, I say cold, but we haven't had a cold winter at all, really, have we?
No.
We've had a wet one.
Yeah.
Well, certainly.
And there's loads of bits of Britain that are now underwater.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah, bits that I used to live in at times. I think, oh, glad I don't live there now.
I know. I don't watch the news much anymore. Partly just through, like, how much time I have, and partly, you know, deliberately. Because, you know, we've spoken in the past, but I've been seeing little flickers of... Apparently there's a bit of water down south at the moment.
Yeah, and the southwest is getting battered hugely. The train lines are out and stuff like that.
Yeah, I saw some photos on crazy
stuff. There is a crazy train line that runs through a place called Dawlish. Uh-huh. And it's right on the coast.
I saw photos of that.
Yeah, and it's a classic. It always gets knocked out with floods and, you know.
You're asking for trouble there.
It needs to move it and land a bit,
yeah.
It's a bit crazy.
But I hope everyone's doing okay and not hasn't affected anyone too badly. But...
Yeah. Yeah, but I'm sure there are a lot of people that are having big problems at the moment.
Hopefully our little self-help show is going to help anyone else who has had a bit of trouble. We're talking about love, aren't we, Sean?
We're talking about love this week, yeah.
How to fall in love, because it's Valentine's Day. Well, 2 days from when we're recording this.
Yeah, so Friday will be Valentine's Day.
Yeah, so probably
it's
might have reminded a few fellas who are frantically dashing out to get some flowers now.
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot.
Yeah, I like the way they call the shops in garages, guilt shops. So people on their way home can grab bunches of flowers, because the garages will be full of them.
This year I will be organised.
Flowers and chocolates.
I will. Before that, though, just a bit of house business to go through. First up, we've had a review. Whoopie-doo, we love reviews, don't we, Sean?
Do. That rhymes. Whoopie-doo, we love reviews.
Yeah, that's a little jingle for us. iTunes review, another UK one by Cole Fox. Thanks, Carl. You said this is a fantastic podcast. It's like having a chat down the pub about life.
Yeah, he's got some clinking glasses going.
I know, yeah. I know, yeah. That's a cool little analogy. I like that.
Yeah.
I love the resources. Started meditation with Headspace, so good on you for that, Carl.
Yeah, brilliant.
And this is the best bit. Also bought the book Live in the Present.
Oh, wow. That'll change your life forever, though.
Yeah, that's it, man.
Yeah.
You're sorted. You are sorted, Carl. My only criticism is getting the EPUB files into iTunes iPad is a nightmare, so the book could do with it, an iBook edition. That's not a criticism podcast, he says. Yeah, that's my fault. It's not my fault. It's tricky.
EPUB.
Yeah, there's an EPUB file on there, isn't there?
But yeah.
There's a little readme that tries to explain how to do it, but it might be out of date, actually. But
yeah.
Drop me a line, Carl, if you have any trouble, and I'll try and guide you through it.
Yeah.
But thank you very much for the 5-star review. Put my computer back down. If anyone else wants to do the same, that would be marvellous, but no pressure, no pressure.
Yeah.
Doesn't have to be 5 stars either, does it, Sean?
No, 4.5 will do.
Yeah.
That's right.
You had a good week, though. But so you're back running, you've done...
Yeah, I did. I've done 6.5Ks, and I've done 5Ks, so I'm good. I'm heading towards the 10K. I'm running a 10K in May. So.
Wow.
So I'm working towards that, which that's good. I'll be there.
Good man.
So, yeah. The other good thing that's happened this week is that if you remember the cancer podcast and Ree's computer got drowned
with
a glass of water.
Oh, I saw a photo.
It's all been fixed and it's back. So she had to get a new top on it. And in the end, they had to have a new hard drive, but it's up and it's working.
And everything salvaged. And
Yeah, we managed to retrieve everything from the hard drive.
So. That's good news, eh?
So she's a happy woman, which is good.
Excellent. As long as Ree's happy, then we're all happy. Yeah, I've had a cool week too. I was racing on Sunday, actually, but I don't want to talk about it because it was a disaster in the end.
why was it a disaster?
Just setup issues, man. The car was just slip-sliding all over the show. It was very annoying.
So, but you're still in the learning phase, then?
A year into it, probably, yeah, but we're going backwards, if anything.
So was David there? Did he take photographs?
David came along, our friend David O'Brien.
Yeah.
David O'Brien
with camera, did he?
Oh, yeah, with camera. I hardly saw him all day. He was just off taking pickies of everyone.
Yeah, brilliant.
But he sent through a load of files, and put some on Facebook, so I'll link to it in the show notes.
Yeah, he's an amazing photographer. He's got a good eye.
Oh, you can tell he loves it, man. That's how he's living in his present, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
He was like a kid in a candy store, I think. But there's some pictures of me, some rare shots of me driving at speed on Facebook, so I'll put...
So what does your face look like? Are you tense? Or...
Yeah, my eyes are a bit kind of... I'm focused.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he's taking pictures. He's not far away from me, but I had no idea that he was there.
Yeah,
because he's that focused on the line, you know, on the road, and not trying not to smash into people.
Yeah,
which I wasn't doing with much success on Sunday. But yeah, I'll put the link up for that because it's some great pictures, and we'll link to Dave's site as well because he's a top-notch photographer.
Yeah, yeah, good guy. Yeah.
Shall we move on to our topic of the week, Sean?
Yeah,
because we're talking about
how to fall in love.
Yeah, how to fall in love. It's Valentine's Day on Friday, though. It's one day a year to celebrate our love.
Well, when I said to Reed about doing this one, and she said, why is it one day a year that we have to talk about love? Why can't it be that we do it every day? And she reminded me of a phrase that I use a lot, which is, what you feed grows and what you starve dies.
That's a favourite one of yours, isn't it?
Yeah, so she's saying, if that's true, it shouldn't be one day a year, we should be doing it all the time. Yeah, and we were laughing earlier on, weren't we, saying that all the guilt shops in the garages that are full of flowers, everybody's going to be going and buying on their way home on Friday from work, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Or Thursday night, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I know. Well, and there's a kind of the cynical side of it as well, which is Valentine's Day has grown into this huge card phenomenon and cheap balloons and all sorts of horrible things that you can get. But ultimately, all that crap doesn't matter, does it?
Sometimes all that crap is crap because it is meaningless.
Yeah.
It's something that I just do because I have to do it kind of thing rather than I'm doing it because I want to do it.
Yeah, if you're doing it on your way home from work is a last-minute thing.
Yeah.
In blind panic. Yeah.
So, so are you already set up? Have you planned? Your...
No, I've got an idea in my head.
Right.
I don't want to give it away because Bethan might listen into this.
She won't be asleep yet, will she?
she'll be still awake at this point, listening, attentive. I've got an idea of what's going to be going on.
Yeah.
So nothing too extravagant, you know. I'm not going to like private jet to Venice or anything like that.
I tried to be ahead of the game, and I got something that I won't reveal on air.
Good.
And then managed to break it.
Oh dear.
And then had to go and get something else. But I'm ahead of the game, and I could repair the next one, so maybe I'm ready for next year too.
I like the sound of that. But how do you know when someone loves you?
Well, that's a really interesting question from a therapy point of view, because...
Am I throwing you in at the deep end a bit there? Just
no,
that
cool.
question there.
That's cool, because a lot of the problems I get with couples is where someone said, I love you, someone said, I love you too, skip off into the sunset. And what should have happened is when someone said, I love you, the other person should have said, what do you mean when you say that? Because we mean different things when we say love.
Yes. And even you don't have to say it necessarily. I've got a friend a while back who was in a situation where they've been seeing someone for a long time, still are seeing them, but that they've been going out for about a year. And the other person hadn't yet said those three words, I love you. And she was concerned about that. But from my point of view, the guy who I knew reasonably well wasn't the type of guy who would actually ever say that, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But he would show it in other ways.
Yeah.
And for me, I could see that he was showing it in other ways, just by the fact that maybe, I don't know, he was living with her. And
I think that makes me want to dip right into a bit of research I was looking at.
Dip away, Sean.
Dip away. Okay, this research, we'll put up all the links to this. There's a guy called Professor Arthur Aaron doing some study from in York. Mm-hmm. And he's looking at how people fall in love. So what he did was, and it relates to other things we'll end up talking about today, he got complete strangers. And... he got them to sit down in couples and to reveal to each other intimate details about their lives for half an hour.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And then they were required to stare deeply into each other's eyes without talking for 4 minutes.
Oof.
Yeah. And the result of that was, and they did it with blood tests and they were checking stuff out, but the result of that was that those people, complete strangers, formed very powerful bonds to the point where two of them got married. And the rest of them had longer lasting relationships from nothing.
Wow.
Yeah. And the reveals, the intimate revelations were prescribed, you know, things to talk about.
Yeah.
But that bonding effect that happened, but I think that the key to it, although it isn't clear in the research, I think the key to it is the eye contact.
Mm.
Yeah. And do you know that someone's pupils open when they're attracted to you? Do you know that?
I've heard of that. Yeah. It actually happens, does it?
Yeah. There's some good book by Desmond Morris, People Watching.
Watching.
Yeah, you've got that, haven't you?
I did have it somewhere.
And there's a picture in there that shows the same woman, one with tiny pupils, one with large pupils. And the question to people is, which one is the most attractive? And it's exactly the same photograph. And people pick the one with the wide eyes without realising what they're doing.
Mm.
Yeah. So if you're watching somebody and their pupils start to get bigger, you know they've got the hots for you straight away.
You know you're in.
You're in the chance. Yeah. But I'm sure that was what was happening in people staring into each other's eyes. They'd had that sharing of intimate detail, and then they're looking in each other's eyes, and that connection was making the pupils open. And as the pupils open, they start to pull into each other.
Is that something you think that couples that maybe have become a bit distant could use as a tool?
Yeah, I think it's really powerful.
To reconnect?
100 years ago, when I was playing in a band, the guy that was the lead guitarist could never look you in the eyes, ever. And he started a relationship with an American girl, and she was the same. And she couldn't look you in the eyes either. And I often wondered what basis their relationship was on, because neither of them looked each other in the eyes, ever. Yeah.
Wow.
It was like an avoidance.
Mm.
Yeah. And some people really don't like you looking in their eyes. They will look away, can't hold it.
Yeah.
And one of the things about doing hypnotherapy work and stuff like that is you tend to learn to concentrate and focus gaze on people. But people find it a bit disturbing.
Yeah,
And feel like you're kind of the eyes at the window of the soul kind of thing. You're looking inside them, you know.
Yeah,
yeah. But
so that's sort of an initial little self-help tip there, eh? Just go and stare into your partner's eyes for three, four minutes.
I wonder what would happen if couples listening to this, maybe they've been together for quite a while, actually did an exercise where they sat down and talked intimately about their intimate feelings, maybe even about their bodies or whatever intimate stuff for. Half an hour, and then did the staring in the eyes for just 4 minutes.
Let us know if anyone fancies it. Go for it.
I like that. If anyone fancies,
drop us an email. Drop us an email. We shall report back to the wider community.
Yeah. The other thing happened to me this week was a woman said to me, "Oh, it's Valentine's Day. I'll be able to ask my boyfriend to marry me."
Oh, yeah.
And I said, "No, you're wrong. It's leap year day. It's the 29th of February. Well, it's the day when women were traditionally allowed to ask men to marry them."
But, yeah, still, there's nothing really stopping her.
I guess. I don't know why she's got to wait till Friday. She can do it tonight.
Do it tonight, man. Yeah. Don't stick it around. Get around. Yeah, that's another funny little, quaint little thing, isn't it? Blimey. But love is a feeling, right?
Yeah, we get confused between love and sex.
Yes.
And yet the two things can be connected or not. You can have love without sex and sex without love.
Mm-hmm.
But essentially, love is an emotional feeling.
Yeah.
And sex is a physical act. And a lot of people would say that sex is better, the physical act is better with the emotion of love attached to it. Other people would say that's the last thing that they want. They just want the sex and do a runner.
Yeah.
And that isn't just men. I know plenty of women that are like that too. But essentially, there is a huge difference between love and sex, and they may not be connected.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But when you start to look at all the research stuff that's around, then love, it tends to be dominant. Because one of the things we were talking about in a previous episode was about the idea of internet porn. Internet dating and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and one of the bits of research I came up with here, which will be up on the site, is that when men are using the digital media, 75% of single men on dating sites are actually looking for love. They're not looking for sex.
Yep.
And that quite shocked me, because I thought it was going to be the other way around. Yeah. In the research, it says that men will tend to kind of boast about their sexuality or their prowess, but what they're actually looking for is love.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting. But that does come back to the issue of what do you mean when you say love? But if we think of love in terms of bonding and care and nurture and stuff like that, that's what the fellas are looking for, although they may appear to be dribbling over pictures of women.
Yes, yeah, we just want to be looked after.
Yeah.
We need people to look after us.
Yeah. So how do you know when you're loved, Edward?
Oh, blimey.
What would that be?
Well, I'll flip it around maybe and I'll say how I show my love is.
Yeah, could be different, but yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, I say I love you all the time, every day I try to, but I show it more. I think the best way I show it is by cooking.
Yeah.
Does that sound, I don't know, that's how weird that sounds.
No, that sounds good to me.
If I'm cooking for someone.
I'd go with that too.
Yeah, if I'm cooking for someone, I think quite a lot of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To me, the sharing of food like that, it is an expression of love.
Yeah.
An expression of inclusion. Breaking bread with somebody. So, yeah, cooking to me would be an important thing.
Mm-hmm.
And saying it, okay, yeah. But the idea that it's the need to express it in other ways. So another bit of research here, again, it'll be on the site, is that when you meet somebody, what is it that is attracts you? Just think about it. Is it what they look like? Is it what they say? Is it what they do? And the research shows that 55% of the experience is through body language, the way people move, what they're doing.
Yep. Yeah.
38% is just through the tone and the speed of their voice. So if you think about people like Barry White, who could kind of, they sing in that deep tone.
Yeah.
That's kind of sexy, I'm here, kind of stuff. Yeah. But the actual content, only 7% is what they say. You know, when people come along and they have their clever kind of pick-up lines, their chat-up lines, the line is actually only 7% important, but the way that they say it is 38% important.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's not what you say, it's the way you say it.
Okay.
That's going to make the connection. But also body language. Mm-hmm. Body language, yeah. And in most instances, body language in this sense is about being loose and being open.
Loosey-goosey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Loose hips, loose shoulders, and open postures, not being closed down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's always funny when if you people watch and you can see people as they open up to another person. And you can see they're kind of exposing their torso, you know, their arms are open, stuff like that. Maybe their legs are slightly apart.
Yep.
As opposed to the person who suddenly closes down, they cross their legs and they cross their arms, cross their front, and they're withdrawing. Yeah.
Yep. I know, I mean, the people that I know who kind of look at the longest lasting relationships quite often have been relationships that have grown out of a friendship. And that's the case for myself and my wife. We knew each other for 5 or 6 years before we got together as an item, and we were pals for way before that. I think there was always a little spark there,
yeah,
right from the off, but you know, we really just got to know each other really well, so by the time we started going out, yeah, there was none of that initial, like, not embarrassing, that's not the right word for that, slightly awkward bit where you're going on, so we didn't go on like a traditional like date, you know, where we're just sitting across the table in a cheap Italian restaurant not knowing what to talk about. We already knew each other really well, so we skipped way past all that bit.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
Yeah. For us, it was the eyes meeting across the crowded room stuff. It was like an instant bump.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you have your glasses on? Because your eyes...
No, did Ree have her glasses?
Because your eyes look weird when you haven't got your glasses on.
Do they?
Yeah.
Why do they look weird?
No, you don't look right without specs.
Yeah, I've worn glasses since I was tiny.
Yeah.
They're a part of my face.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel odd without them on.
Yeah, you never wore contacts, though?
I did try contacts for a bit. It felt like having half a brick in each eye, which wasn't fun. And the other thing was I felt very naked without glasses on.
Really?
Yeah.
I wear contacts. I'd prefer to, really. You can't wear them for work, like looking at a screen. But yeah. You should try them. The new soft lenses are lovely. You don't even know they're there. Not that I'm trying to. That's my resource of the week.
It's contact lenses.
AccuView one day lenses.
Yeah, but if we're looking at eye contact, what about these contact lenses that make your eyes very blue, that kind of thing?
Mm.
That you can enhance your eyes.
Or you can get like cat's eyes contact lenses, can't you? And all sorts of mad ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy. But that must affect, because there's this dominance of eye contact in sexual attraction. I wonder what effect those kinds of changing your eyes would have.
Yeah.
You know. But that goes along with, if you think about the way that people make their eyes up, and I say people because it appears that it isn't just women these days, but the idea of putting liner on your eyes or mucking around with your eyebrows is going to change the way that your eyes are perceived.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, quite weird. Okay, let's talk about brains.
Okie doke.
Yeah, because I'm into brains. I'm into the whole idea of neuropsychology. Which excites me. I'm excited about the different kinds of hormones, endorphins, and things that are flowing through the system.
You haven't got like racks of brains in your.
I wish I had. It would be fun.
Slice them all
slices,
into little.
Yeah, have a good look. that exhibition that they had in Liverpool, where they had the bodies that had been plasticized, mm-hmm. It was absolutely fascinating looking at brain structures. Absolutely fascinating.
They are amazing things. Aren't
they? Yeah, incredible.
Then cauliflowers, love them.
Okay, let's go through the idea of attraction.
Yep.
You know, that you meet somebody and a bell rings. So what's going on inside you? Well, the first bit we'd label lust, and that's driven by the sex hormones. So you've got testosterone and estrogen.
Yep.
That start to come up so that we have this level of arousal that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's a good level, that.
Yeah. Yeah. Once you like that bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, once you move it to the next bit, which is stage two, you start to activate all the classic neurotransmitters. So you've got adrenaline, dopamine and serotonin. So adrenaline raises your blood pressure, and adrenaline is the one that you use for fight and flight. So it's the same part of the system. But one of the things about when people become aroused is like because the blood flow starts to come to the surface, people's lips get redder and like nipples get harder and all that kind of stuff that happens.
Yeah, etc.
Yeah, and men have bits that get bigger.
Yeah.
As the blood flows, there's all that kind of stuff to go on. The dopamine, which is one we've talked about quite a lot, is the desire and reward one. You get this big rush of dopamine, which is always called the love drug. that's the kind of ecstasy feeling. And serotonin is the one that is the well-being one, but it tends to live. If you've had a beautiful encounter with someone, the most amazing sexual experience, and you've had all the dopamine and that ecstasy feeling, what you tend to take away is levels of serotonin. And the levels of serotonin make you revisit the experience. So in post-traumatic stress, it would be flashbacks.
Wow.
But in love, we're flashing back. But we're creating the chemical serotonin. So each time we flash back to our loved one, we get this whoosh of serotonin that makes us feel really good, tremendous well-being. To the point where, and I love this bit, is if you do blood tests on people that are in love, you start to analyse the bloods, the blood level, especially the serotonin levels, are exactly the same as someone's got obsessive-compulsive disorder.
Wow.
So when you're in love, effectively, you've got OCD. Whew. Yeah, you're stuck on the person. Yeah, and that is the direct chemical relationship.
Some good natural highs going on there, eh?
Yeah, yeah. It's good, powerful stuff.
Who needs tablets and...
Yeah.
Yeah, various other forms of...
I'm sure that if we lived more balanced lives, that our need on medication either... legal or illegal would reduce dramatically.
Yep.
You know. Yeah. So in your world that you live in, what's your chemistry like? Do you have lots of dopamine highs? If you think about the different bits, dopamine gives you the woo factor, because you obviously get dopamine when you're out on your go-kart.
When I'm racing.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's good dose of that then.
Real dopamine stuff then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's deliberate, really. I think I needed something like that in my life to kind of get the woo really going.
Keeping
a lot of
going.
People are the same. They might go, whatever, rock climbing or skydiving, these extreme sports, say. But apart from that, I don't know, I'm a fairly placid kind of guy.
Yeah.
Beston's always saying, like, I don't get super happy or excited about anything. I think my argument the other week was, you know, what was it? I don't need to be happy to be happy. Like, I don't need to be happy and smiling just to be happy. I'm happy just being. Just being.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And that's a good place to be.
But at the same time, I miss that kind of rush that, you know, when you get in the early stages of a relationship, when you're not seeing the person all the time, or like, you know, I used to get maybe a text from Bethan long before we were like an item, and it'd be like a really exciting little thing, and I can remember the physical, like the feeling and the little high you'd get.
So do you still text each other?
We still text each other, yeah, but it's like, you know, who's cooking tonight? Oh yeah, what's for tea? Did you?
Maybe you should experiment with some flirtatious text.
Have we got enough onions yet?
Hey baby, how about it?
You know, yeah.
Got a text. Yeah.
Should we buzz someone now? Yeah. And everyone that's listening to this show now, send a flirty text to your your other half.
Yeah, and you could go the whole hog and write a love letter.
Mm.
You know, do the half-hour intimacy and four minutes eye contact.
Whoa, 4 hours, imagine that.
Yeah. You'd be blind completely. Yeah. If the other bit of the brain that I like is orgasms that are a good part of relationships, and you get the release of oxytocin, which is... what we'd see is the bonding chemical, which comes in orgasm in both men and women, that when you orgasm, you get a greater bonding with the person that you're with. But the bit of research that we mentioned a little while ago was when a woman is breastfeeding, having her breast sucked by the baby creates oxytocin in her and oxytocin in the baby.
Mm-hmm.
So you get the bonding. But that's also true sexually. If a man gets into nipple activity with his partner, then you get the oxytocin bonding.
Weren't you talking about that with someone at the networking event the other week in the morning?
I think we could have been.
But
I wasn't suggesting that we did.
Come getting brought up at the...
I don't know why.
At that event.
Yeah. And the other endorphin that we don't hear anything about, or not much about, is a one called vasopressin, which is... a hormone, which is a commitment hormone, and it's released after sex, particularly. And I love this bit of research. There was a bit of research on prairie dogs.
Oh, yeah, everyone loves prairie dogs.
And prairie dogs are quite promiscuous and do a lot of bonking, but they're bonded in pairs.
Yeah.
And what was done was that they took the males and they gave them a drug to suppress the vasopressin in their system. And as soon as they did that, their connection with their partner and with all their children just went immediately.
Wow.
And they couldn't care. They were, you know, couldn't care, gone. And because the vasopressin comes from the sexual activity, it makes you begin to realise how sexuality and bonding go together.
Yeah.
Yeah, sexuality, bonding in relationships and happiness and fulfilment all come together.
Mm.
Yeah, which is really important. So even if you're not actually doing it, as it were, like being sensual and touching is a bonding thing. It creates those chemicals within you.
That's cool, isn't it? And that's right across the animal world, or just certain species? And...
Well, mammals particularly.
Yeah.
But yes, if you watch any group of mammals, they can't stop touching each other, whether they're chimpanzees or whether they're wolves and dogs, and anything like that. There is that connection all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, cows, horses, watch them in the field.
Some people aren't that touchy-feely, are they? Every now and again I'll meet one that, you know, because I'm quite a hand-on-the-shoulder, touchy-feely kind of guy, and sometimes you'll do that to someone, the odd person who really doesn't, like, appreciate it, and like, ooh.
I would suspect, and these things are always a bit controversial to say out loud, especially on air.
But I
would suspect that people that are very repressed and inhibited in that sense, or are not comfortable, are people that are expressing deeper problems that haven't been resolved.
Well, that's what I was going to suggest.
Your
thinking on the...
If we try and look at natural, what's natural? You know, natural, because we are group animals...
Mm-hmm.
And group bonding is a part of being a group animal. And people that have ceased to bond with the group, and that very often is touching. Yeah, and it's not sexual touching. People get confused between the sensuality of a cuddle or a hold or a handshake. Yeah, anything like that.
Yeah.
That idea and sensuality, sexuality get confused.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially for fellas. So women will say to me, I can't just have a cuddle with him because he thinks he's on with the chance then. That kind of idea. That idea of we need to be more aware of what we're doing. But I think that when people are avoidant of contact, they're describing an inner issue, which is either an inner withdrawal for safety. It may be the result of some kind of trauma. Mm. And people will very often say to me, if I say that to them, they'll say, but my family's all like that. So it's a learned response.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, if my parents weren't touchy, then we're not touchy. That kind of idea. Yeah, but how far back does it go? Because the trauma might have happened several generations ago, but the results of the trauma has been passed on down the generations through learned responses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Uncle Billy the Butcher from 1843, who mass murdered a load of people.
And everyone stopped cuddling from their numbers.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Interesting, isn't it? Interesting.
So are your family cuddlers?
Yeah, we're all quite touchy-feely. And even my pals as well, growing up, I remember we had a night out once. There's like six or seven of us boys that used to go out into Liverpool on nights out and have loads of fun and games. And we were all really close and touchy-feely and hugging each other and jumping on each other's backs and all that.
Yeah.
And then I remember one night someone else came into the group, a pal of ours, but kind of not a close friend. And he came out with us, and we were like all jumping around and hugging and stuff. And he really wasn't like up for it as well. And you could tell he was really uncomfortable.
Freaked out.
And I remember thinking back then, well, what's all that about?
But he hadn't got the group bond.
Yeah. Maybe he was just intimidated by it. Not that we're intimidating, but when you see.
But maybe if he'd been around for a long period of time, he would have gradually become inducted into that.
Yeah.
Into that state.
Mm.
Yeah.
Maybe. We should have given it more time.
Yeah.
But we ostracised him, we cast him aside. Get out of our group.
Yeah. Very loving, though.
Yeah. Didn't really. I still know the guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So finally, the self-help tip, which is a good one.
Is how to fall in love.
How to fall in love. A tip for falling in love.
And I think that could be fall in love with a stranger. You grab a stranger off the street. Or it could be fall in love again with your partner.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the deal is half an hour intimate conversation. Yeah, as intimate as you can get.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then 4 minutes of actually staring each other's eyes, silent. Yeah, you might be allowed to hold hands or something like that, but you're staring in each other's eyes, silent, and reconnecting.
Wow.
Rebonding. It's like, I think that's probably like rebooting your computer. It's like turn it off and turn it back on again.
Yeah, always fixes it, doesn't it?
Yeah, reconnecting and getting back into that intimacy with your partner.
So everyone on Valentine's Day, let's put aside 34 minutes.
Maybe what we should do, traditionally, we should have like a ceremony in the middle of the day, you know, where people have this half hour and then we have a 4 minute silence where people stare at each other's eyes and rebond, do the rebonding.
Mm, that's cool.
Yeah.
Okay, have you got a resource for the week, Sean?
Well, I'm going for this, but there's a guy called Lucia. Max Lucia, and he did a book called the Lucia Colour Test. And it's a fascinating book, the Lucia Colour Test, because it gives you a direct readout of your personality. It works on the basis of how you reject and accept colours. And the Lucia Colour Test has got 7-8 colours in it. He's looking at emotional responses in what you're accepting and rejecting, to the point where he may actually say to you in the readout from the test, it looks like you have a cardiac problem, you need to go and visit your physician. Because people will avoid stimulating colours when their heart is, or their respiratory system, or their vascular system is compromised.
Okay.
Because they're too stimulating. They go for all the dull colours.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But this one is another one of his books, which is called The Colours of Love. And it's the same kind of thing, where you get 4 cards, 4 different colours, which are kind of quite horrendous pinky colours. The particular shades are important because they have specific effects on your nervous system. So there aren't just simple names of colours. They have to be those shades. Yeah. And they're quite specific when they print them. Precise. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, we both did it. Can I read these out?
Go for it.
Yeah, okay. My one was a 1-2-3 picking of colours.
Textbook.
So mine says, you're not a sexual go-getter. You're a sensitive partner with a distinct need for peace and harmony. Your way of experiencing an erotic love relationship is through deep felt sympathy. An emotional bond and trusting connection with your partner are prerequisites to an erotic love relationship. Your particular gifts are your delicately receptive, resonant way of connecting with your partner and your readiness for tender devotion.
That's you in a nutshell, that is, yeah, sure.
Do you want to read yours?
I don't think we want to, because it wasn't quite so...
Have a look at yours.
Is this me?
Yeah.
33.
That was you, yeah.
I was a 3-4-2. Your ideas of sexuality have been scarred by negative experiences in the past.
I don't know what you've been up to.
No. Neither do I. You don't really believe that two people can have a profound emotional understanding or that they can truly be on the same wavelength. You're deeply disillusioned and you protect yourself by being constantly on guard against emotional dependence upon another person. Blimey. However, you experience sex as carefree fun, as a provocative game, or as an adventure with no strings attached. In your sexual relationships, you're neither critically reserved, nor do you attach any importance to choosiness or restraint. Blimey. I don't know about that.
So you're a free flow. I think that the thing that's important in these is that it's a test that's based on a theory, and we don't know whether the theory is right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'll have to do loads of... I mean, there is research around the Lucia work.
I'm sure.
But maybe it points us in directions rather than being a definitive statement.
Yeah, it's get some interesting conversations going.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
My resource of the week is a cookbook. I was trying to think... That's how I express my love, I think, best, by cooking. Yeah. And of all the cookbooks I've got, or we've got, most of them we never use, but the one we keep coming back to is Jamie at Home. Which is on the bottom shelf.
All right, yeah, I'm with you, yeah.
Which has got some awesome recipes in it. I mean, it's just, we only really go back to like 3 or 4 of them, the ones that we just do over and over and again.
Yeah.
Like the pizza recipe and the, I believe the shoulder of lamb from that book is incredible.
Yeah.
For the meat eaters out there.
Yeah.
But yeah, cookery for me is the way to express my
Heart. And because, I mean, we've just been talking about brains and chemicals. We know that food has a direct effect on mood, food and mood. So there are certain foods that are going to stimulate the serotonin, and there are foods that are actually aphrodisiac, you know, and that do stimulate different bits of your system. It's true.
Asparagus, isn't that one of them, I think?
Just makes your pee smell funny, doesn't it? I mean, the other thing, when you get into food, because you're eating with your eyes and your nose and all kinds of stuff, and you get into the idea of pheromones... there are certainly perfumes that are sexually stimulating. And a lot of perfumes do have processed monkey glands in them and stuff like that.
Lovely.
Yeah. Or the chemical equivalents, perhaps.
Cool. All right. I think we're all done this week, aren't we, Sean?
That's good. Yeah.
Let's go off and find some love. Well, we know where to find it, don't we, me and you?
Yeah. Love is here. Love is all around us.
It's everywhere.
Love is all around us.
All right, thanks for listening, everyone. Next week, we're chatting about laughter.
Yeah, we're going to have a good laugh.
So we've had love.
Yeah.
Now laughter, which I'm looking forward to. It gives me a lot more chance to talk about Seinfeld. if you've enjoyed this week's show and you want to find out more, go to the website. You'll find all the links in the show notes section. You can also sign up to be on our mailing list, and we'll send them to you each week in our little weekly podcast alerts. Loads more goodies to get as well if you sign up. If you can share this show with a pal, we would be most grateful. And you can follow us on Twitter and Facebook and all that stuff.
Yep.
And in the meantime, Sean, I will bid you farewell.
Au revoir.
Have a good week.
I will do. See ya.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.